Chapter 2 Before Eric's bosses recruited him, Henry McCoy III was actually eyeing the Air Force. He was in MIT at the time, but spent most of his time designing newer, faster, more advanced planes. Even at work, his desk is always decorated with a few model planes he's put together with painstaking care in his free time. And when he was young, his parents could afford to take him on planes even just to the next state. McCoy was raised in suburbia, is the thing, with loving parents who sent him to a normal school. He played lacrosse and was in the math league. He was popular in a nerdy way, too smart by half. And while his parents encouraged him to hide his feet, they just had shrugged and said that these things happen sometimes. Eric met Representative McCoy and Mr. McCoy at a fundraiser once. He'd liked them, well enough for humans. Representative McCoy had told him to watch out for her son and not to let him do anything too dangerous. She's all for mutant rights these days, now that Hank seems to have settled into Division X, and there's talk of running her against the incumbent senator in the next election. Eric likes her, so it's going to be a shame when he tells her he had to kill her son for the good of them all. But really, he was trying to kill them. They divided into two jets that Hank designed and oversaw the construction of, and Eric is in the one that Hank's piloting, while Emma's in the one Darwin, former Air Force pilot, is in charge of. Hank keeps insisting that he's not flying too low, but Eric finally has to just focus on the warm hum of the metal hull and all the screws and washers so that he doesn't kill Hank preemptively. It's not that Eric doesn't like flying. He just hates flying with McCoy. Which is probably why Emma made sure he was in this one, because she's a bitch and pissed at him, and made of all the evil things in the world. He's really glad she's on his side. I could probably kill him and you could fly it, Summers offers, looking a little green. I'm sure we could figure it out before we die. I can hear you, Hank tells them, twisting to glare, while Eric and Summers and Sean and Raven all frantically gesture for him to watch the road, you fucker. Fuck my life, Sean mutters. Oh my God, fuck it so hard, man. You should never have stolen him, Alex tells Eric, looking wronged, slumping against his seatbelt, arms folded over his chest and legs splayed. We should have let R&D keep the bastard. And, yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because Eric didn't know that Hank was mutant when he'd recruited him. He just watched what the kid could do and seen that he was going to be bored with simple R&D when Eric could offer him things like Cerebro. Started back in the 60s and never seen through because they couldn't figure out how to make it work. It had had some big long name. Biomechanical Reactive Advanced Interneural Stimulator, BRAINS, because the 60s were full of drugs. Eric had let Hank into the old facility and then argued for 45 minutes with Darwin about whether or not he was allowed to go rescue his boyfriend from his parents. Look, I know you're my boss and you have this thing where people having lives gives you hives, but I am legitimately telling you that my mother is going to kill him. It's not really any of my business whether Summers is capable of winning over your family, but as a point of interest, you should probably not have mentioned that he was a convicted criminal in solitary. Man, you suck. Alex Summers and Armando Munoz were one of those things Eric hadn't expected to last, but had. Between taking in Alex's kid brother and managing a pretty terrible job, they'd managed to keep it up for 6 years. Now Mrs. Munoz's favorite pastime is demanding to know when they're going to get married and give her nietos. When Eric had finally hung up on Darwin and turned back around, Hank had the tech relatively functional and had drawn up schematics on how to make it actually work in the 21st century. That was the point Eric had refused to give him back. Now, Eric regrets that decision. Still, they land without injury, and if Sean throws himself to the ground and kisses the snow, even Alex can't bring himself to make fun of him for it. And Eric pretends he can't see it in favor of glaring at Emma. Emma tilts her head and raises her eyebrows, and Eric just points at her, pulling on a glove and popping his collar up against the chill. Like any good government facility, Alkali Lake Industrial Complex is a stone's throw from the town of Shelburne, Alaska, because experimental tech isn't fun unless there are civilians nearby. It's a relatively big town, though, with several hotels, probably all thanks to the fact that it's the last stop before you get into Alaska's wilderness. It's big enough traffic that a group of 9 doesn't make anyone blink. Well, 8, because Azazel is in discretion mode, and as soon as Eric got a room, Azazel was setting up shop in there, arguing with Hank, who actually hates teleporting, but hates teleporting equipment even more, about how to put up their surveillance. Janos and Emma play the married couple doing some sightseeing. Darwin and Alex are lawyers dealing with a corporate case about the oil refinery having some trouble upstate. And Eric is a foreign investor with Sean as his PA. Because Janos is a jerk, and he's the one who came up with the cover stories, Raven and Hank are on their honeymoon. Raven looks speculative and asks if there's a honeymoon suite. Yes, as it turns out. And they get bumped up because the old woman behind the desk thinks they're so cute. Hank may never stop blushing. The covers are enough to give them access to the town, and while Eric knows by looking that Sean and Raven and even Hank are a little, not inconvenienced, but annoyed by the need for a cover, Eric has done this enough to know the one time you go in without is the time you need it. He lets the rest of them start setting up while he does some sightseeing, thickening his accent and smiling vaguely at passers-by. There's a bar that serves a decent German lager, and he wonders if Charles can feel that they're close. The bartender is a pretty girl with very interesting tattoos and a tongue ring. She smiles at him, sly and cocky, and he toasts her as his phone rings. "Mein Liebling," he greets Emma, who makes a horrible noise at him in answer. He grins, and the bartender gives him his tab. He hands her his credit card. "You can come back now," she tells him, sour. "I am at the most wonderful bar where they serve excellent beer," he tells her, signing the credit card receipt and playing with the pen for a second before putting it down, pocketing his wallet, and heading out the door. Emma understands him when he speaks German. Telepathic skill or just long enough exposure to him, he's not sure, but she doesn't like it. It's like she thinks he's doing it to provoke him. "Nice sugar," she replies in her thickest southern drawl. "You want me to bring you a mint julep?" he asks solicitously, snow crunching underfoot as he heads back to the hotel. She hangs up on him, and he laughs, nodding at the concierge and heading up the stairs to his suite, which seems small with 9 of them in it. McCoy has the 3D layout of Alkali out, and Janos and Alex are arguing ways to get in. "It's deserted, obviously, from the outside," Azazel says. "Ruins, even. Local gossip is that it blew up from one too many projects going awry back in the 70s, Raven reports, tucking her hair behind her ears. "But is under an endam itself," Azazel says. "And I don't think it's nuclear energy at all. I think it's all the dam. Because if you see here..." He pulls up a series of photos from the last 10 years. "It gets more use now. Only nothing fluctuates because power is drawn to Cerebro. No one notices. All very contained." "Definitely, Shaw. Stryker's not clever enough for this," Janos agrees. "But you can see here, floodgate. Supposedly designed to relieve pressure in dam when runoff gets high, but..." He smirks, giving Eric a look, and Eric nods. "Interesting placement," he agrees. "And from what we've been able to tell, they have no actual lookouts. It's all run from the control room here," Raven says, pointing, and Azazel nods. "Cocky of him," Emma remarks. "It's a local pastime to go out there. They say you can hear the screams of dying government agents on cold nights," Raven says, a snarl curving over her lips and her eyes flashing gold just for an instant. "They're going with the haunted cover." "A classic," Eric allows. And Emma snorts while Raven looks up at him and then smiles. "So, what's the plan? Go in metaphorical guns blazing, or do we try to sabotage? Darwin asks. Though, I gotta be honest, I don't see a whole lot of space here for sabotage, seeing how it's inaccessible. No, Emma snaps, and Eric raises his eyebrows at her, and, oh yeah, she knows what he's thinking. I didn't say anything. You didn't have to, she says, tightly furious. Are you stupid? What did he do? Janos demands, standing up, and Emma's lips are drawn. There's a lovely mutant girl working as a bartender down the road a bit, Eric says mildly. You spoke German, Emma says, closing her eyes and pressing her fingertips under them, careful of her makeup. Do you play with a pen, too? Eric looks at her. Would I do something so blatant? Will someone catch the rest of us up? Summers demands. We cannot get into the facility with any ease, Azazel says. I cannot get in where I cannot see, and there is no one for Miss Xavier to impersonate. However, this is Shaw's facility, and Eric... He trails off, looking for the words. He'll open the door for me, Eric says. He'd be stupid to, Emma argues. And stupid he is not. He will leave you standing there. He won't care what or why you've come at all. Not if he has Jackson, Eric argues. Jason, Janos corrects, glaring. Whatever, Eric dismisses. That helps us how? Darwin demands. So he gets you, and then he's got you under his thumb, and we get in how? You just become one of the other ones whom he nabbed. Well, Sean says, looking at them, and then hesitates when everyone turns and looks at him. Jason can't get into Eric's head, and it's a metal facility. Eric smiles at him, and Sean flushes a little. Everyone goes quiet, though. And then what? Darwin asks. When they brought down the school, there was a lot less planning than they were given credit for, after. The big plan had been to take down the adults, while Eric went after Shaw, and then run. And as a plan concocted by 18-year-olds, it had been pretty decent. They did take down the adults, identified the kids who were going to try to keep them, and took them down too before running for the town a few miles away. Eric had met Shaw outside his office, ripping the wiring out of the wall to keep him from advancing on the kids scrambling to get out of the way. How can you do this to us? Shaw had asked him, looking genuinely hurt that Eric didn't see his vision. How can you betray your own people like this? You are not my people, Eric had replied, and wrenched. Everything. Wiring, parts of the foundation, screws, nails, studs, pieces of upholstery. It all surged towards him, and Shaw had turned and run into his office, laughing. You could be so great, Eric. We'd only just begun to see what you are truly capable of. This just shows that we have only brushed the surface. Like it was all experiments in the abstract. Like Eric didn't have scars from where Shaw had tried to fuse metal to Eric's bones, or where he had cut into him, trying to see how high the metallic content had to be before Eric could stop something from coming towards him. Like the scarred mass of tissue on his upper thigh, where Shaw shot him to see if Eric could stop a bullet in mid-flight, didn't exist. Like Eric didn't have a barcode tattooed into his forearm when he was a child to remind him that he was a thing, not a person. That was about the point Eric lost it. Shaw had three grenades in his office he managed to detonate and absorb to throw in short, sharp bursts at Eric, while Eric found the gun and shot him three times. And he still doesn't know how Shaw survived that. Eric had excellent aim, before pistol-whipping him. The building was burning around them, and Eric slipped on the smooth floor in his own blood, and he'd been winning. A heavy power line had shot through the window and wrapped around him, holding him still, while the rest of Shaw's stockpile flew towards Eric and then Juggernaut, Mr. Marcus, ostensible geography teacher, ran through the goddamn wall and wrenched Shaw away. Eric had followed, screamed at Emma that Shaw was getting away, and she had followed, the four of them scrambling over the wreckage and down the lawn and onto the beach, moving towards the docks where Marcos and Shaw were disappearing into a fucking submarine. Go, Eric had shouted hoarsely at Azazel, who had stared at him. I can't see inside. It's suicide, he said. And Eric had stared at them, and then jumped into the roiling water after it and latched onto the sub with everything he had. He can remember that the Atlantic was fucking freezing, even for July, and that it was black. He doesn't remember it burning into all the places he was ripped open, though it must have, the salt water pouring over his skin. All he can remember is the way he felt every time a panel strained towards him, the way it pulled him deeper and deeper and faster and faster. That's not true. He can remember Emma, who must have jumped in after him, holding on tightly and screaming into his head that they were both going to drown if he didn't stop this instant. He shut her out, threw her to safety and broke her fingers relying on the rings she never took off. Emma doesn't wear rings anymore, and if you look carefully, there are white circles around each finger with a metal bit into her. He can remember the water churning, opening around him while Janos forced it out of the way, trying to get Eric the space to take another breath until he was too deep, and then Janos tried to suck him out of it by using the whirlpools. He thinks Azazel kept trying to yank him out, but kept not making it, couldn't break Eric's hold. They found him washed ashore in Nova Scotia, and Janos had sat with him in a Canadian hospital where the news ran about the school, about the submarine that had surfaced off the coast of New Hampshire and been abandoned, looking like someone had wrapped an enormous fist around it and clenched. DNA testing revealing Sebastian Shaw had been aboard. He made the FBI's most wanted in the space of 2 hours, hijacking a plane and diverting it to Argentina. They showed the little coastal city and said it had been a freak nor'easter, that there was no evidence to prove that the mutant student population was responsible for any of it, given that most of them had looked like refugees, half-starved and bruised and beaten. So the downed power lines and the thrown cars and the wrecked boats had been blamed on nature, and the kids had been sent back to their parents, if their parents would take them, and if not, they were found foster care. It didn't end well for all of them, but there had been nothing Eric could do about it from his hospital bed. It took Eric 4 weeks to be able to go home, and Azazel had picked him up and taken him back to the wreckage of the school, and Emma had stood beside him and said, "So, now what?" The last time they did this, they were children, disorganized and afraid and desperate. It's been 10 years and change. They're none of those things anymore, and Eric will die this time to bring Shaw down, because he won't be able to endure it if he wakes up in a hospital and Janos tells him quietly that Shaw got away. He has the backing of the United States government, though frankly he feels that the government would like it if Eric would stop pointing out that they're connected and thinks that they should see other people. He looks at Emma, who looks back at them. "We divide and conquer," she says, and everyone turns back to her. "I'll take Raven, Azazel, Sean, Alex, and Hank with me to go rescue Xavier and whoever else is there. Eric will take Janos and Darwin and find Shaw." Alex looks at her. Why only 3 of them? "Because a big group won't matter. Darwin should be able to handle anything that comes at them, and Janos knows how Shaw fights, as well as Eric. More of us for the rescue, because there's the chance the rescued won't appreciate it as much," she says, shrugging elegantly. "Questions?" "So Eric gets in, and what? Opens the door for us?" Alex asks. Eric tilts back his chair. "Essentially." Eric looks at Janos, who nods. "I have something," he says, and Eric follows him into the bedroom. "You know this is stupid," Janos says. "Better me than you," Eric says. "Because I cannot defend myself?" Janos asks, glaring at him. And Eric shakes his head, pausing as he strips out of the turtleneck, arms over his head and tangled in fabric. "Because you shouldn't have to," he says, and Janos huffs a breath. "Neither should you," he says quietly, and then hands Eric a white t-shirt and a pair of jeans. Eric raises his eyebrows. These are mine. I am not an idiot, Janos reminds him. The only person who did not see where this was going was Emma, but Emma never saw what she did not want to see. She saw too much as it was. Which is why I never held it against her, Janos agrees. And you were always his favorite. It had started when they were 16. Eric had been, well, wooed aggressively. Everything suddenly became we and together, and Cha's concepts of personal space fled fast. But he never shoved, just was inexorable for 2 years. And while Eric had dodged, he had never managed to come out and say no. With Janos, Cha had taken, had never even pretended to ask. Eric could kill him for that. I'll get him this time, he says, buttoning up the fly of his jeans and pulling on the boots Janos packed. I know you will, Janos agrees, rifling a hand through his hair and shifting his weight, one hand perched on a hip. Now, more importantly, do you remember how to flirt? Fuck you, Eric mutters, holding still while Janos does something with Eric's hair. You think I'm teasing, but I have legitimate concerns, Janos informs him. Okay, stand up. Let's let them see. Eric does, pulling on the leather jacket he swore he'd never wear, after it inspired Senator Kelly, whose hatred for mutants is apparently less than his desire for a bad boy, to some serious groping. They reemerge to a few insultingly stunned looks and one wolf whistle, because Emma is shameless. Look at it this way, Emma thinks at him, crossing her legs but not looking at him. Even if your boy doesn't remember you, he'll still want to fuck you, as long as Jason doesn't get Cha there first. I hate you, Eric tells her genuinely, and she smiles tightly. She really doesn't like this. It's a hike out to Alcali, and really, it's a very pretty spot. Eric can see why Cha picked it, even if it is fucking Alaska. He steps into the tunnel and then looks down at the inch of water and hates his fucking life. Frostbitten is now the way he wants to go here. He walks slowly and then tilts his head because there's a child, shivering violently in the corner, a pretty little redhead. Hello, he says. She flinches back from him, shrinking into an even smaller ball, and he crouches, tilts his head, and wonders if this is how Cha is treating. God, how many kids does he have here? What are you doing out here? He said I was bad, she whispers. Eric considers her, and he remembers Jason now. Remembers sometimes there would be a little girl roaming the halls who never got older, who would smile sometimes and walk too close, take advantage of a hug. Eric never bought into Jason's games, saw through them, and made sure it was known. Eric was always much more interested in making sure people knew that there was a fucking pecking order, and he would always be at the top. He wonders if Jason remembers him, if he's enjoying this, if he wonders why Eric didn't kill Cha when he had the chance. I'm sure you weren't that bad, Eric assures her, and she looks at him. He offers her his hand. Shall we tell him that? She nods, tentative, and presses in close to his side. It's weird, because if he lets his eyes go unfocused, he can see that it's Jason. Tall, with curling dark hair, and just a little too thin, pressed up alongside Eric with a too sweaty hand. Eric tries to just see the little girl. He looks up at the security camera. Are you going to let us in? He asks, raising his eyebrows as the heavy doors slide open. It's weird. It's like those hidden pictures, when you let your eyes go unfocused and see the bunny, or whatever's been hidden in there. He knows that they really are going into the compound. He was afraid for a second that Jason would be able to make him think that, and they'd be stuck in the waterway. There are soldiers everywhere, all of them armed with metal guns. And the bartender girl is standing up on the landing, looking down at them like she hates her fucking life. And in the center of everything, because he was always a melodramatic prick, is Sebastian Cha, who, what the fuck, has not aged. Eric looks at him, hands still wrapped around the little girl's small one, and loves him, adores him. Shaw saved him. And then Eric wants to die, because that's Jason. And Jesus fucking Christ, Stryker must be a bitch of a parent if Shaw is the better alternative. Still, he lets it propel him close, taking his hand out of Jason's and letting Shaw wrap his arms around him tightly, one hand on the back of Eric's head. He presses Eric's face into his neck, holds him too close, too long, and Eric thinks that if he doesn't kill him now, then he deserves all the fucking awards. He loves you, Jason says in his little girl voice. He's home now. Are you? Shaw asks, peering into Eric's eyes. Are you home? Are you here to be a disobedient child again, ungrateful for everything I did for you? I'm home, Eric says, and his voice doesn't shake. He's home, Jason affirms, and Shaw beams at him, hand settling in the small of Eric's back, thumb hot on the skin between Eric's shirt and jeans. Come see, Shaw says. Shaw, Marcus says, stepping forward. Everything shudders. It's all right, Carl, Shaw tells him, smiling. Eric understands. He's done fighting for the doomed human race, aren't you? Eric nods, smiles with a little too many teeth. Why fight for them when you can squash them underfoot? Shaw beams at him, leaning in. You see? Marcus raises his eyebrows, but he lets it go. He lets it go too fast, though. Let me show you what we have, Shaw says, bringing him further into the compound, and its old habit to match Eric's stride to Shaw's. Shaw punches in a key code, and Eric follows him onto the catwalk that stretches out into the cavernous chamber. At the end of it, Charles Xavier is sitting, slumped, in a chair with a helmet on his head. No, not on his head. Pinned into his head. Drilled in the way they've... drilled him to the chair. Meet our salvation, Eric, Shaw says. It's not easy to walk down the catwalk, to lean against the console, and assess Charles Xavier's body. Malnourished, dehydrated, paralyzed, possibly quadriplegic, definitely paraplegic. Completely shut down. Not there. But Eric does. Our salvation is a corpse, Eric says flatly, unimpressed. He feels like he's going to destroy everything, and clenches his fists, tightening his watch until it breaks the skin, the flare of pain distracting him sufficiently, enough to maintain his calm, to keep the walls from curving towards him. And your schematics are wrong. Wrong? Shaw repeats, quizzical. He has a flat, Midwestern-sounding accent now. Before, there was something vaguely European about the way he constructed his sentences. It's too big. You used the wrong kind of metal. And it isn't about the strength of the telepath. It's about how the panels are arranged, Eric says. We didn't write that down, so it would have been hard to steal it. Though you did have a telepath, so it shouldn't have been that hard. They had discovered it while sitting there, while McCoy was arguing that it had to be the size of the chamber, and Eric had been moving panels because he was bored. When it had flared to life, they had, well, mostly pissed their pants. But after that, it had been awesome, despite Emma's nosebleed. Shaw looks at him, hard for a minute, before his face breaks out into that smile, pleased with Eric and himself. "Where is the White Queen, Eric?" Shaw asks. But Eric ignores him, crouching in front of Charles and peering up at his sallow face. "Were you trying to kill him?" He didn't respond to the normal pressures, but everyone has a breaking point, Shaw dismisses. "Magneto, where is the White Queen?" "Not here," Eric says absently. "It's the truth, even. Or maybe the room is blocking her. Outside, they must be getting ready to attack. must be sliding in. Still, if they can't, he could probably do it. Get Charles out and kill Shaw. He's pretty pissed, and that makes him dangerous. More dangerous. They've shaved Charles's head and left the blood to dry and flake off of his face. Eric brushes at it with two fingers. There are bags under his eyes big enough to fit a small baby in, and his skin is so white it's almost translucent. And he's so full of drugs that there's just nothing there. Charles' eyes aren't tracking, and it's painfully obvious that the chair he's bolted into is the only thing keeping him up, mostly due to the injuries inflicted on his goddamn spinal cord. "You have changed," Shaw says, pulling Eric to a stand and peering at him. "It's the way of things," Eric agrees. And Shaw laughs, cups his cheek. His helmet catches the light as he reaches out to brush the fingers of one hand down Eric's cheek and across his lower lip. "It's good to have you home. Now we can demonstrate to the world that evolution is the way of the future."
"Demonstrate," Eric repeats flatly.
Shaw smiles and tugs at his shirt sleeves, flicking the cuffs back into place. Vain. Eric had forgotten how vain he was. "Yes, come see. He is not going anywhere," he chuckles, leading Eric back out.
"I'm coming back,"
Eric tells Charles, because he has to wait. "Give the team 5 more minutes. 5 more minutes, and then he starts bringing the place down. Shaw takes him down an elevator and into a corridor. Eric doesn't understand at first, because Shaw is looking around with that proprietary expression, pleased with himself, but it's all unclear, until he realizes it's a row of cells on either side, and with people huddled in them, missing mutants and humans alike. Eric recognizes some of them from files that crossed his desk, and he takes care to keep a look of mild interest on his face.
"And this is?"
"The future. It's taking, well," Shaw says, "we had a few problems stabilizing it in the early stages. One man liquefied, became water. It was very strange. And then for a while, it was neutralizing the powers of the mutants we were testing it on. But eventually, well, it's moved faster than we could have anticipated."
"The government is funding this?" Eric asks.
"Shaw is creating mutants.
That's new.
And seems counter to the government's policy of toleration."
"Jesus fuck. Did they even know what they were funding?"
"And Shaw probably came right out and said it. It's probably in some piece of paperwork filed somewhere that a bureaucrat missed. They think that it's a project to create a super soldier," Shaw dismisses. "A new agent in the war on terror."
Eric nods. "Of course. That would get him funding from anywhere.
And Jason is controlling his father, which means Shaw doesn't have to announce his presence, which is how the wanted criminal is getting away with being on base.
And going under the name of Smith.
Clearly the troops here weren't selected for their intelligence." "You see how much better this is?" Shaw presses. "We're not here to destroy them. We're here to offer them the chance to evolve beyond nature's own design. This is humanity's next chapter, and we're offering them a chance to be a part of that."
"And if they decline?"
"There's no room for the human race as it currently exists in the world that is coming, the world that we are building."
"Assimilation or death," Eric surmises. "It's like the Borg, or the Cybermen."
"You're such a pessimist, Eric," Shaw says fondly.
"And when this is turned on a mutant?"
"It simply further enhances the mutation, accelerates it. We've been able to modify it. It was used to help fuse adamantium to the skeleton of a mutant with near instantaneous healing abilities. He's doing quite well, though the amnesia is a bit of an inconvenience."
"That's Logan explained, then."
"It's a better way," Shaw repeats.
pulling Eric along with a hand solicitously on the small of his back. It's a peaceful alternative to the war that's brewing.
"Why do you feel like you have to convince me?" Eric asks, furrowing his brow. "I'm on your side."
Shaw lifts a corner of his mouth in something like a smile. "You're on your own side. You always have been. Jason just makes you forget that. But you'll see when it's over. You'll see how much better this is."
He looks at Eric, wistfully, cupping his cheek. "You and I are alike. We're fighting for what's ours. You'll see that. We're fighting for the same thing, protecting the same people. I'm just doing it on a global scale."
He smiles and opens the door back into the room with Cerebro.
"You're the best thing I ever did, Eric. They'll follow you. You just have to remember what the goal is. Jason and Charlie can help you."
The door locks behind him, and Eric looks at Jason. Not the projection, but at Jason, who tilts his head and puts his hands into his pockets.
"Hello, Eric."
Jason is from Texas. He has the corresponding twang and drawl.
This voice is British, and posh at that. "Hello, Charles. How long have you been writing, Jason?"
"I do it from time to time. It keeps me up to date with the developments. And we've come to an understanding."
"Which is what? You're more powerful than he is, so he does what you say?"
Jason's face twitches into an almost playful smile.
"Yes, essentially, though I might have worded it in a more flattering way."
Eric glances back at Charles's body, then at Jason, Charles.
"That's so weird."
Jason's eyes drift to the side.
"They're here."
"Eric, you brought Raven? She's a child."
"She's really not."
Jason makes a face at him. "Stop distracting me. This is difficult." Eric wants to say that it shouldn't be possible to take over someone's body and shove their consciousness to the side so entirely, and then project out with his mind, not using his body. Even if he's looping with his own body in order to use his powers, that still shouldn't be possible.
"Armando is here."
Eric turns around and twitches his fingers at the door, sliding it open. Darwin raises his eyebrows.
"Hi, boss. How's it going on your end?"
"Our end is going creepily well."
"That would be Charles," Eric tells him,
and Darwin tilts his head to the side, looking around Eric at Charles's body, and then eyes Jason.
"I want to know?"
"No.
Get Azazel. Get him out."
"This?"
"He's in Jason's body, so he can tell you how to move him."
An explosion rocks the compound.
"That would be Alex," Darwin says, like Eric's suffering a brain injury or something, and can't recognize the sound of Summer's particular brand of destruction.
"Wait, Eric, where are you going?" Charles demands, and Jason's body steps forward.
Eric backs up, just enough to keep the hand Charles reaches out from landing.
"My job. Get him out," he says to Darwin, and takes off at a dead run to find Shaw.
The thing about Shaw is that despite the fact that he's a megalomaniac with genocidal tendencies, he honestly believes the bullshit he spouts about brotherhood, about being mutant and proud, the strongest possible mutant you should be. And he's adamant that mutants don't hurt their own kind, except under circumstances that better the race. So he didn't expect it when Eric turned on him the last time, and he doesn't seem to suspect anything this time, at least not on this scale.
He meets Eric in the hall a level above Cerebro.
"What is this, a rescue mission?" he asks, projecting paternal disappointment.
Eric, not this again."
Eric doesn't say anything, just flicks his wrist, sending Shaw jerking back by the dog tags he's wearing. He wonders briefly what's written on them, if anything, from what country, what war.
"Emma, tell me." "Azazel just got Charles out," she replies, terse and instantaneous. "And then it's okay. Now he can focus, because Shaw isn't walking away from this. He doesn't have to worry about his team, because he doesn't pick them so that they'll all get along, though they tend to, and better than he'd like, given the way they pair off. He picks them because they are competent, will fight and save the day, and live to tell about it. He doesn't pick people he has to babysit. I have had years under this dam," Shaw tells him, "like this is all going to be civilized. What now?" Eric knows that Shaw has reserves, and that he can't match him for stamina. But Eric can bring the building around their ears, and Shaw? He won't be able to survive that, even if he's absorbed 5 nuclear warheads. So Eric braces himself and wrenches, and spares only a brief moment to enjoy it when Shaw's smug look vanishes as the entire compound shudders, and the metal from a control panel shifts, pins Shaw to the opposite wall, holds him tight while cables and wiring slide out to wrap around him further. "Eric, don't."
"Who do you think you're talking to?" Eric asks him, grinning just a little, all teeth.
And it's worth it to see the look on Shaw's face, the betrayal and incredulity.
"I don't think so, bitch," Marcus snarls, bashing through the wall.
Eric's lip curls in disgust, and he clenches his fist, the rough cast iron of Marcus's helmet smashing in on his head, crushing his skull and brain, until the body, with half a head, falls to the ground, the gory twist of metal hovering before crashing down with it.
"How long can you last, Eric?" Shaw asks, face twisted. "This was always your problem. You're very impressive for a while. And then you collapse with a nosebleed and need 3 days to recover. I'd say you're about at the end of your rope. So what do you do now?"
"End this," Eric replies.
"Don't. Eric, do not." Charles's voice snaps, sudden and abruptly worried.
Eric can't listen. Won't. The entire building is shuddering already, structurally unsound. Mutant warfare will do that. And Emma is shouting at him that they have everyone. "Everyone is out, and where the fuck are you? Damn it, Eric, where?" Before he cuts her out. He can't seem to block Charles, though. It's really very simple. He doesn't need to see how this works out, what kind of life Charles will lead, or how the team will cope with the fallout. He just needs to see that Shaw ends. Above them, there's an almighty groaning noise, and the floor is wet.
"The dam is giving away, Eric. What's the plan here?" Shaw demands, wrenching against the bonds, flaring brightly before the energy subsides under his skin again. "You're going to stand here until I drown?"
Eric doesn't understand. He thought he made this clear. Shaw was going to die, and Eric was going to make sure it happened.
"You can't. You'll die. You have to let go. I know what this means to you, but you are going to die. Please, Eric."
"That's the plan," Eric tells Shaw blandly, leaning against the opposite wall from him.
Shaw glares at him.
"Let me go, Eric, for Christ's sake. You can't still be pissed about..."
"You have no idea," Eric tells him flatly.
The water is already knee-deep, freezing and swirling around, pressing at him, trying to bully him along.
"Sorry, Charles."
"Eric, don't. Eric, don't do this. There will be another time."
Eric laughs, just a little, though it sounds bad. Less of a laugh and more of a choking sound.
"No, there won't," he says, and pulls.
The force of the release knocks him to his knees, and he feels like he's run a marathon or gone 5 rounds with Azazel, and the entire foundation is gone, warped. The support in the dam is gone, and they're going to drown very shortly. But this place will be gone, and with it Shaw. He's just about made his peace with it, tuning Shaw out, when fucking Charles intrudes on his acceptance of his death. Get up! Get up, damn it! Eric! The water shoving him along, pieces of the building knocking into his legs violently. They're never going to find his corpse. Charles. I can make you, Eric. Get up and start walking. Go to Cerebro. There's a ladder that goes up into the ruined compound, but you have to go now, before the water level gets any higher. Eric looks at Shaw, pinned to the wall by the metal Eric is holding in place. If he goes, Shaw can get away. Eric! It's nothing less than a roaring sound in his head. Furious and desperate. And Eric goes, gets to his feet and fights his way up the current. The water is at his hips and still rising, freezing, and it's a huge effort to keep walking. He presses his hands against the smooth metal walls and anchors himself, but the force of it beats at his shoulders, and when his feet slips and he wrenches his shoulder, it's all he can do to maintain his grip. He finds the ladder, rungs built into the wall like those on a ship. When he climbs up and forces the round hedge open, the water barrels down on top of him. The rungs hold on to him, keep him from being swept away. He has to find, there must be, something he can grab onto to pull himself up. But if he does, he'll lose the grip on Shaw. There's a helicopter. Eric can feel it faintly, but it's too far away and he slams the hatchback shut, gasping for air. A chopper is too far, and it's moving, and he'll definitely lose Shaw. Back to plan A, then. Eric, you must do this. You can do this. Calm your mind. Find the place between rage and serenity.
Are you fucking with me? Eric chokes. Because what?
Your power doesn't come from your anger. It simply reacts to it. If you are at peace, Eric, you're stronger than you know. Just, please, let me.
He's bombarded abruptly by memories of his parents, of his friends and his old school in Lish, of finding Emma and Azazel and Janos and making their dysfunctional family, of recruiting his team. And then, with a sense of curiosity that isn't his, coming home to watch Antiques Roadshow and eat pizza, of talking about his day while he made his mother's soup.
I would like to know what that tastes like, Charles says.
Find the sodding helicopter, Eric. It's difficult, actually, to maintain a sense of serene calm when he knows that above him is 20 feet of raging, violently churning water, and 40 feet above that is a helicopter that he's supposed to somehow grab hold of. But he does. He shoves the hatchback open, latches onto the helicopter, and pulls, surging through the water and wrenching free of it, gripping the leg of the chopper and clinging, coughing violently. MacTaggart sticks her head out and raises her eyebrows at him before she pulls him inside.
I didn't know you could do that, she yells, grabbing a hideous orange blanket and throwing it at his face.
Surprise,
he yells back, and she grins at him as he buckles in, tapping the pilot on the shoulder.
No, wait, Eric says, because he needs to. He needs to know that...
He wrenches, and the metal wraps itself around Shaw, dragging him against the current and up through the hatch. And when he pulls free of the water, Eric takes MacTaggart's gun and shoots it. Shaw drops, and just after he hits the water, he explodes, all the pent-up power released. And Eric guides the chopper away, wrapping the blanket around his shoulders and putting on the headset.
You okay? MacTaggart asks.
I'll live, he replies, and she nods.
We got the kids out, all the people he had taken, and that's going to be a clusterfuck, managing that. And Summers thinks he got the database. Stryker's in custody.
Quentin, she clarifies at Eric's look. And, well, your team is banged up. McCoy's in a hospital room. They hit him with the serum, or whatever it was. We're monitoring.
Xavier?
She's with her brother, but we're keeping him close. Last thing he needs is civilian doctors.
Eric exhales.
You okay? She asks again.
You look bad.
He must look like shit for her to ask twice, to comment on it. I'm fine, he says flatly. And she nods and watches Alaska fade away.
The plane ride back is slow, and Eric almost misses Hank's driving, which has to mean he's concussed. He comes off and finds Janos waiting for him on the blacktop. MacTaggart stands back while Janos crosses the tarmac and takes hold of Eric's shoulders. He lost the jacket somewhere, looking at him closely.
Done then, he says relieved. And you look tired. But not like you're about to die.
Yeah, Eric agrees.
Azazel passed out like a pretty princess, Janos informs him as they walk towards the hospital. He says it was the strain of so much teleportation in so little time, combined with so many passengers. But I think his fragility is coming through.
He'll be delighted to hear it.
You say that like I haven't been telling him since he woke up, Janos says gleefully.
It's like you don't even know me.
Where's Charles? Eric asks, ignoring his babbling.
I'm fine, by the way.
Janos.
Janos grins and whistles. They never have figured it out, if it's the frequency or what. But Azazel can pinpoint a location based on the sound of that whistle. Emma's been able to do it from the other side of the planet in diamond form. They have to be careful about the dog jokes, but really.
I thought you said he was tired.
Yes, and if I took you by car, he would kill me. Janos agrees, as Azazel appears in a puff of sulfur.
You drive like shit, Azazel points out.
Fuck you. Just take him to see Dr. X before he has a stroke, Janos says, and Azazel grins.
I thought he would be prettier, though I suppose we should be glad you bagged a doctor, Azazel tells Eric seriously. Not Jewish, but pretty for a chicksa.
Eric stares at him in absolute horror, and Azazel laughs, and the world jerks and then shifts, and he looks down the hall of a hospital. Agent Lencher, a doctor whose name tag marks him Theodore Malvitz, says, putting down a clipboard and walking towards him. Eric doesn't want to know what it says about him that the facility doctors recognize him on sight when he doesn't recognize them.
Let's have a look at you, shall we?
I'm here to see Charles Xavier.
Relationship?
Ah, no, Azazel says patronizing, putting a red hand on the man's shoulder and smiling with all of his teeth, thickening his accent.
You must be new.
He pulls the doctor away by the arm over his protests, and another doctor says from the desk where she's writing in a patient's chart without looking up. 606. Eric glances at the signs on the wall and then heads to the ICU rooms and stops outside 606. Charles looks very small in the hospital bed, like even more of a corpse under the hospital's unyielding lights.
He's paralyzed, Raven says.
But they don't think. There's no brain injuries, and you won't be able to see the scars when his hair grows back in.
Her hands are shaking around her cup of coffee, but other than that, she looks steady enough.
McCoy?
He's fine. He's blue, like the bastard love child of Beast and Grover, but he's fine. He's fine, and he will be fine, she says firmly. She's in her blue form, and Eric wonders if it's out of strange solidarity or if it's because she's too tired to maintain another shape.
I hear you did good today, he lies.
He's sure she was spectacular. He just hasn't been briefed.
She smiles tightly at him. Thanks, she says, and then shifts uncomfortably. Do you want to? I mean, you can sit with him, obviously, I'm sure. He'd probably like that.
No, he says, because he can make do with this, with watching the steady pulse of the heart monitor. She spent the better part of a year trying to find her brother. Eric has no claim on this time.
She smiles tightly again and slips into the room, sitting beside Charles and folding her hand over his, watching his face with a quiet sort of desperation that relaxes abruptly.
Ah, he's awake then. Okay.
You're in 623, the doctor from earlier tells him. Her badge is tucked into her coat, but he recognizes her, vaguely. Maybe the weird way her Bronx accent winds around her Spanish accent, or the way she pulls her cornrows back severely. She raises an eyebrow at him. That's a hint, Lencher. He goes, because he has nothing else to do. He sits and endures the tests, the stitches, the prodding at his ribs and the cleaning out of the gouges in his legs and back that he didn't notice he got while the compound was collapsing. Reyes comes back just as he's falling asleep and says, Well, you've been worse, and frankly, you're better than we expected. Take two of these, sleep, and if nothing exciting shows up, I'm kicking you out of the bed for someone who needs it. Eric eyes the pills and bites back the reply that if she wanted him to sleep, maybe she should have fucked off. Take the medication, Lencher, Reyes says, rolling her eyes at him. Your bedside manner sucks, he tells her, and cheeks them, spitting them out when she's gone and staring at the wall. He feels weirdly at a loss. It's done. Shaw's dead, Charles is found, and will live, and the paperwork for this is going to be such a bitch. Eric groans and presses the heels of his hands into his eyes. Charles's room has a nice comfy chair, and his eyes are open, and he tracks Eric as he walks in. You look like shit, Eric tells him. Charles huffs a laugh. Yes, so my sister tells me. He's dead then? Yeah, he's dead. He can't help the flush of relief, a fierce gladness that curls in his stomach. This thing that's hung over Eric's head for over a decade is gone. Good, Charles says, though it's more dubious, like he's not certain he means it, which is baffling, given what Charles suffered at the man's hands. Charles bites his lower lip, looking at Eric, who stills, lifting his eyebrows inquiringly. I'm sorry, Charles apologizes. It's all very hazy for me. The rescue, or... No, the last year. My impression of a ghost, Charles clarifies wryly, playing with a blanket covering his useless legs. Why the house? Eric asks. Oh, that was the house we lived in last as a family. I suppose it was safe. And then you, well, he talked about you constantly. I suppose I recognized you. He smiles in apology. You tried to scare the shit out of me, Eric reminds him. As I recall, it failed spectacularly, Charles points out, smile becoming less apologetic. You're not very frightening, Eric says, spreading his hands and leaning back in the chair. Your scale of what is frightening is very skewed. Yeah, that's true, Eric agrees. Where are you? Do you want the house? He asks. I can crash at Emma's. I will probably be forced into crashing at Emma's, actually.
Don't be absurd. You bought it. We haven't owned that house in years, Charles dismisses, waving a hand. We have an estate in upstate New York. Raven and I will retire there for a time.
What? Eric shakes his head. Nothing. You just... actually do talk like a 102-year-old earl suffering from gout. I thought I was making it up.
Charming. He has questions, dozens of them, suspicions and accusations, but right now he feels calm, and he's loath to give it up. He doesn't feel like this often, hasn't felt like this for over a month, since Charles withdrew from the house. I didn't. Your friend is very angry with me, and she's very pointedly broadcasting it.
Emma?
She thinks I've seeded in your brain for a nefarious purpose.
Have you?
Charles looks at him then, studies Eric's face like it's still unfamiliar, like he's trying to commit it to memory. He smiles. No, I'm not there at all. It is simply...
an echo of where I was. I would never enter your thoughts without permission. I'm sorry I did it at all, but I'm afraid I was a bit mad and...
Charles.
Yes?
You're fine.
Charles smiled at him again, quick and pleased. All right, then. On to more pressing matters. Is Courtney still with Scott, and is Chloe pregnant yet?
I hate you so much, Eric tells him earnestly,
and flicks the channels to E so that Charles can catch up with the Kardashians. Eric goes back to work after 3 days, though Charles will stay for far longer. There will be surgeries to remove knotted scar tissue and physical therapy. Eric leaves the pleasant bubble of the hospital for meetings and debriefings from everyone up to the CIA director, joint chiefs, and the fucking president. They've kept dangerous people, and Eric keeps having to remind them that yes, fine, Wade Wilson was a mercenary, but he was a government-sanctioned mercenary. Eric explains the situation over and over until he's hoarse, defends himself and his people, and finds himself in a dogfight to keep the mutants, who Shaw had kept like lab rats, out of government detention facilities. They've split them into 4 teams, each of them taking 4, and it's manageable. It's fine. They're fine, if people would just get out of his fucking hair. MacTaggart shows up in his office late one night, and they spend hours poring over contacts, making phone calls, spreading out a net to try to find the mutants who had scattered before the government can. The irony of it all, which MacTaggart points out over late-night pizza, is that technically they are the government. Eric sends Emma to talk to Senator Grayson, who is a mutant rights supporter who wants to have hearings in Congress. That shit will end up on C-SPAN, and then it will be out of his control. It won't. Not really. Eric can fuck up a broadcast, but he prefers not to. Grayson decides against it. Eric tries to visit Charles, but with this pissing contest he's having with the world, Eric doesn't have a second to shit, let alone visit Charles. You've been busy, Charles observes when Eric walks into his private room. Eric puts his face in his arms on the bed, inhaling hospital detergent. Charles laughs and puts a hand in Eric's hair, tugging lightly. The headache vanishes.
I hate everyone, Eric tells him earnestly.
Charles chuckles.
You don't.
Well, you might actually, he amends, tugging on Eric's hair again until he lifts his head.
I spent 3 hours defending Jason today, Eric says. It had been awful, because Eric has no empathy for those who can't save themselves, for the people who can't fight for their autonomy when they have the chance. Charles had had to be screwed into a chair. And Jason? Jason had let every opportunity to escape pass him by.
He was a victim, Eric, Charles says. You can't damn everyone for lacking your force of will.
I can, actually, Eric argues. I think the high point was when I told a president's aide that I was probably more dangerous than Jason, considering what I could do with the electromagnetic impulses in the body and brain. God, Eric, Charles groans, putting a hand over his face to cover his smile. That's what Emma said, Eric agrees. I feel dirty, like I would never be made clean. Callisto liked it, though, which is good.
Callisto is the only one he's not sure about. She keeps eyeballing him, standing defensively like he's going to lunge at her, like she's thinking about attacking him preemptively. After today, though, he thinks they've turned a corner. Either that, or he's going to trade Janos, Callisto, for Myling. He should probably have someone who can teleport on his team. Wade and Logan are exquisite, and when Raven comes back, they'll be fine. But they're none of them able to get out quickly.
How was physical therapy? Eric asks.
Abhorrent. The doctor's a psychopath, Charles replies. And there's a grain of truth there, something that makes Eric want to pull down the blankets and see if Charles is bruised.
Who is it?
It's casual. It's very impressive. Dr. Creed? Charles says vaguely, looking for the remote.
Eric stills.
First name Victor?
I believe...
Eric, what?
Jesus Christ, Eric mutters, grabbing his phone and calling Wilson, slamming the door shut and stretching the metal across the room.
Eric,
Charles says, wary, and Eric waves him into silence.
Sweetie, love cheeks, Eric, babe, I'm in the middle of a thing, Wei tells him, enough out of breath for Eric to know exactly what he's in the middle of.
Why is Victor Creed Charles's physical therapist? He asks.
There's a long pause. Then, you give me the best presents.
Eric, Charles snaps. Victor Creed is a former hitman for Stryker. Was, back in the 70s. The file on him says he died in 86. He was buried and everything. But that's the thing about Creed. He doesn't stay dead.
You think he has some misplaced loyalty? Charles trails off, hand lifting to his head. No, you don't care.
Wade Wilson will kill him, and that will be the end of it.
Don't do that, Eric says.
A rap on the door interrupts. It's me. Eric opens the door, puts the room to rights. CIA security is not what it was.
Actually, it is. It's just... shit, man. So apparently if you kill him by cutting off the head and then burn that, it works.
I called Logan to verify. He's very heartbroken you didn't call him first. You'll be having words tomorrow. And this must be the little missus.
Charles Xavier, Charles offers. And God, he looks amused.
Don't encourage him, Eric tells him.
And Wade beams. Sitting in a visitor's chair, long legs stretched out in front of him, katanas leaning precariously against the wall.
Eric, I have missed you like that song, like the desert misses the rain, and I miss you.
Shut up, Wilson, Eric snaps.
You know, Logan had no idea.
Then Logan gets babysitting duty.
Damned either way. Okay, I've got sisters in my bed. Brothers. I have two people who are probably related in my bed waiting for me, Wade says, and salutes and saunters away. Eric, you can't.
Yeah, I can.
Charles smiles at him a little sadly. You can't, though. You can't protect me from everything.
They have one conversation about it. It's after Charles has finished a conversation with Raven, in those initial days when Eric is sitting at his bedside, like he's stuck to it. He's reading a damage report that MacTaggart had run through with a highlighter, like the pain in his ass that she is.
Why do you do that?
Eric asks, when Charles looks at him and smiles an apology.
Why do you use your fingers? Charles counters.
To direct things?
Do you have a button in your left temple that requires two fingers and turns on your telepathy? Eric asks, and Charles laughs.
No. No, it helps me focus.
You didn't use them for a year.
11 months. Let's please not round up.
Okay, Eric allows. 11 months, and I'm willing to put money down that you didn't lift your hand.
Circumstances being what they were...
You're broadcasting.
I'm not.
No, not. You're not broadcasting your thoughts. You're broadcasting what you're doing.
It's difficult, Charles says slowly,
like he's never had to talk about this. Never gotten drunk and talked about the manifestations of mutations and coping and directing mechanisms. The philosophy of how they're directed and used and bullshit that seems important at 2 a.m.
When you've a power that isn't visible and can pass undetected, people tend to be suspicious. I know just from sitting here the story of everyone in this room, but to telegraph my intent, it...
It lulls people into underestimating you.
Surely you're in favor of that as simple strategy.
It did work for you before.
Eric's figured this much out. The reason it was so easy, with so few casualties. Charles was in all of their heads. Shaw thought he was broken, and everyone took his word for it. They didn't even notice him sneaking into their minds. Though, to be fair, Eric's been trained to notice, and he didn't either. Charles was the reason Marcus and Stryker let things go too quickly, and why Shaw seemed so taken aback when things went south so fast. Charles's powers hadn't penetrated the helmet, but they'd worked on everyone around Shaw, lulling him into a false sense of security. And the fail-safes he'd put into place all collapsed faster than he could account for.
Why didn't you tell me where you were?
You have it almost right, Charles says. I was, well, I'd never been in the astral plane before. I lost track of time, and when I left you, it took me quite a long time to come back to myself. Eric lifts an eyebrow, and Charles touches the scabs and the fuzz of his hair.
Ah, they had drilled him in that day.
Quite.
And that's it. All they talk about.
And later, when Azazel asks if Eric had anything to add to the report, he says no. Then he turns on the television to Mob Wives, and Charles allows the distraction.